Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this week's Turning Towards Life with Lizzie and Justin. We are here, as usual, on Sunday morning. It's around about 9 o'clock, and I'm joining you from a very beautiful sunny day in Scotland. So I've managed to make it up to Scotland in our car with Matthew and Vespa, my husband and daughter, and we are really enjoying being in the fresh air by the sea. Completely different scenario to London, where we've been in lockdown for all these months. And so we're in this funny world now where we have to wear, I think it's the same in England too now, though, that we have to wear face masks in the petrol station and in the shops and everything. And I'm noticing that it's a kind of strange thing for me. And I don't know if anybody else, maybe Justin, you're the same, because I have glasses, as soon as I stick a mask on, the glasses completely steam up. So the whole thing is a complete stupid hot mess of me going into any shop. So anyway, I heard there's a video on YouTube of how to wear a mask when you've got glasses on. So I'm going to try and watch that and figure it out. But it's a whole strange new world. So anyway, I'm really glad we're somewhere very open and that I don't have to go into many shops, because I feel a big aversion to not being able to see anything all the time and not being able to breathe in any place I go into. So I'm very grateful to be outside a lot and being in the world in that particular way. And really grateful to be here for this amazing source that you've brought, Justin. And again, I think it's true to say that I have just as normal a life as anyone else. So to come here and to be in this and to recenter and relearn things like this is talking about, this source is talking about listening and interpretation. And it feels so welcome to come to this kind of church, if you like, to come to this place where we speak about something consciously and in the field that we've made, Justin. I'm really grateful that we've continued doing this and that we're making this conversation an ongoing, long, long conversation. So I'm really grateful to be here and grateful to be including Meg Wheatley and paying some kind of respect to her by doing this together.
Particularly as she, in part, Lizzie, is responsible for the name of this project. So I'll get to that. Well, I'm really pleased to be here too. When you said long conversation, I was thinking that this is maybe the longest sustained conversation I think I've probably had with anyone. Of course, I have long, lifelong conversations with many people, but not a purposeful, ongoing, we're turning up again and again and again to talk in this way. And maybe for many people who are listening, it's the longest conversation they've ever listened to. So I wanted to say thank you to you all for being part of this. And to also say, of course, in a way, just by, for anyone who's listening or watching, you're part of the conversation too. We can really feel how this happens, because it's something much, much beyond us. And to remind everyone, particularly maybe if you've just joined, that you can actually join in a conversation on our Facebook group where this goes live. We are live now on a Sunday morning, and there's a place to chat to one another in the comments, and sometimes some really very beautiful conversations open up there in response to what we've been talking about. So just search for Turning Towards Life on Facebook and ask to join, and we can welcome you in. We'd be so happy to do that. Last thing I want to say, Lizzie, before we read the source, is I'm really struck by what you're saying about being ordinary, and I realize that one way to come at a conversation like this is a sort of very earnest way, which is, well, we think we've got this all sorted, or you should have this all sorted, or some kind of, that's the point of the sources. And I think the point of the sources is actually, in a way, completely upside down from that. It's to remind us all about the messy ordinariness of being a human and how much we have to grapple with all the time and all the mistakes we make, and inviting us to pay attention so that we can find ways of continuing to deepen and open and grow, but keep on never forgetting that there's no way whilst being a human not to be a human. So I'm glad for that. Certainly with this source, I could recognize so much of what I get stuck in here as I was reading this. So this is Willing to be Disturbed. It's from a very wonderful book by Margaret Wheatley called Turning to One Another. And this phrase, turning to or turning towards. I remember really impacting me when I first saw this book, and it's part of how, it's part of the genesis of this being called Turning Towards Life, at least from my side, and the Turning Towards One Another project that we've got going on in Third Space on Zoom every week is also, at least for my part, inspired by her work. And it's a beautiful book about talking to one another. So here we go, Willing to be Disturbed. We weren't trained to admit we don't know. Most of us were taught to sound certain and confident, to state our opinion as if it were true. We haven't been rewarded for being confused, or for asking more questions rather than giving quick answers. We've also spent many years listening to others, mainly to determine if we agree with them or not. It's impossible for two people to ever see things exactly the same, and to be curious about how someone else interprets things. We have to be willing to admit we're not capable of figuring things out alone. With so many interpretations available, I can't understand why we would be satisfied with superficial conversations where we pretend to agree with one another. What surprises and disturbs me is a very useful way to see my invisible beliefs. If what you say surprises me, I must have been assuming something else was true. If what you say disturbs me, I must believe something contrary to you. My shock at your position exposes my own position. When I hear myself saying, how could anyone believe something like that? A light comes on for me to see my own beliefs. These moments are great gifts.
We weren't trained to admit we don't know. Most of us were taught to sound certain and confident, to state our opinion as if it were true. We haven't been rewarded for being confused, or for asking more questions rather than giving quick answers. We've also spent many years listening to others mainly to determine if we agree with them or not. It's impossible for any two people to ever see things exactly the same. And to be curious about how someone else interprets things, we have to be willing to admit we're not capable of figuring things out alone. When so many interpretations are available, I can't understand why we would be satisfied with superficial conversations where we pretend to agree with one another. What surprises and disturbs me is a very useful way to see my invisible beliefs. If what you say surprises me, I must have been assuming something else was true. If what you say disturbs me, I must believe something contrary to you. My shock at your position exposes my own position. When I hear myself saying, how could anyone believe something like that? A light comes on for me to see my own beliefs. These moments are great gifts.
I want to start at the beginning of this. So I realized as I was reading this how much I want to be right. How often, even when I say I don't, I very often still secretly do, and how frightening it is not to be right, Lizzie, but to feel the feelings, having staked something on being someone who knows about stuff or being right about things, how completely disorienting and painful it is to admit that I don't. And even though I know that I've been consciously practicing not doing that, softening, being right, it's still painful to be caught out. That's the feeling. It's something I think that probably got started very long ago, because it feels like something very small in me, not very adult in me. Oh, I'll get embarrassed, I'll get ashamed if I've started off standing somewhere and then really listen to you and find out that I could call my what I'm standing on into question. It's really tender and it's really vulnerable. And I notice how often I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And the part that Meg Wheatley says at the end, which is so illuminating, is, I think for a lot of the time when I find myself that way, and I have in the past found myself that way most of the time without even knowing it, this part that she points us to, which is when what we say makes us angry or surprises us or shocks us or disturbs us, the main thing that it does is it shows us that we have a position in the first place.
Mm.
Which I think when, at least for me, when I'm really, really certain I'm right about something, and very often this comes up for me, the place it most comes up for me is in relationships where I am sure that I've been the one who's been acted with integrity or acted with kindness or something, and the other person is the one who can't see and can't understand and all of that. It's such a great reminder to see that my shock or my anger actually shows me that what I have is not the only story about this. It just happens to be the story I have. Oh, I've got a position on this. Oh, and that's a, I'm in huge agreement with her on this, that if, when I can use my strong feeling about something that's happening in conversation with another or with other people, instead of as an opportunity to bolster my own position, to hold on more tightly, it's a real thing to start to learn that when we feel that, that's the moment to go, I wonder what it is that I'm holding on to so strongly that has me feel shocked at what you're saying. And just that move to go, I wonder what it is the part that allows you, Lizzie, to start to become a person who also has a place and a position, not just an untruth or something that's crashing into my own truth.
Yeah. So what's arising? Well, firstly, what's arising for me, Justin,
when you were saying about how frightening it is to not know, I want to appreciate that what I do see in you is your willingness to not know. And I know you say you've been practicing that, but it's one thing to be aware of something and then it's another thing to actually let go. So it's one thing to go, I can see I'm just being righteous here and I just want to be right and I want to know. And you could just carry on. But I think that is a phase we have to go through in this path, is to just be able to see but not be able to do anything about it. So to be aware that I'm doing it, but to not then be able to act on it. But I feel like I want to acknowledge that I see you doing that a lot, where you are willing to be moved and then you move, like you move off the place of what you thought you knew, but you're changed by people. I see you being actually changed and changing your response. And it just feels important to say that, because I think it's not something that's normal or regular in the world to see. And it's really hard to do it. And of course, there's probably times when you don't do it as well. It's like, all of us have a choice, and sometimes we take the choice and sometimes we don't. And we saw that we didn't take the choice, but we just couldn't. It was just too hard. Like walking back in the room after an argument. It's like, I want my legs to turn around and get me back in the room again, but they won't go back. And then sometimes my legs take me back. Like it just happens that way. So it feels really important to acknowledge that. And also what comes to me as well is, sometimes it's really important to take a position on something. And I think it's only important in a very small percentage of the time. And the rest of the time, we don't have to take a position at all. Like there are decisions to be made, of course. But if we make decisions having lived just in that realm of decision-making and not in the realm of reflection and allowing ourselves to be wrong and opening to all kinds of things before that decision-making period happens or before that stand-making thing happens, we most likely probably wouldn't be taking a stand in the way that has integrity for us, really, really. So to be interrogated by our own reflection or relationships and conversations feels like part of the process of then being able to take a stand, to be able to make a decision, to do something finite, But in the run-up to that, it seems like I'm feeling invited anyway from the source to be, to treat those moments as much less significant than the significance of staying open until that needs to happen. So instead of being a person that just makes stands and points and positions again and again and again through my life, what if I only use that superpower when I have to, rather than as a habitual way of responding to the world? And in the meantime, just keep opening and seeing and opening and being changed and having a light shine on my beliefs, so that I can actually do those things when they come to pass with integrity, because I have opened and I've listened, and to treat those moments as something I've come to from a journey, rather than, oh, I just do this all the time. I've just got a position on everything all the time. And that's how I feel really invited in here, is to, and actually it the middle part about the satisfaction with superficial conversations, pretending to agree with one another. I feel like that's become, well, I'm fine with that. Like, it's really okay, because sometimes some things aren't my conversation to have or my fight to fight or whatever. But I feel like, and in a way, those opportunities for me are to learn about people's interpretation. So I can sit there in superficiality, and I learn a lot from superficiality. I learn a lot from mundane conversations where people are telling me who they are, and probably I'm telling them who I am. And it feels like those are equally important in a way as a listener to myself and to other people. And of course, I completely relish the conversations like we have. But it all feels like relevant learning information, whether it's superficial or deep or profound or mundane or ordinary. It just all feels like a big way to learn.
I want to read that middle paragraph in a slightly different way to the way that Meg Wheatley's written it, given what you've just said, Lizzie. When so many interpretations are available, I can't understand why we would be satisfied with superficial conversations where, and here's what the where is, I think, maybe this is exactly what she meant, where we give up on our own dignity and adulthood and capacity in order to pretend that we're not affected by what's being said. So I was thinking, whilst you were talking about something we've talked about now and again, about finding a way to be the right size for a human. And one way that many of us go, which is the first part of this, is we go too big. Like exactly what you were saying, and I so appreciate what you said to me, Lizzie, and I see that in myself as well. The learning to give up, I'm going to be right here, which is sort of grandiose. Like, I'm the one who's right and you must be wrong, and nothing you can say or do would possibly change me. That's like overinflated. But then this paragraph in the middle is about the other one that we do, which is so that I won't upset you, so that I won't have to feel anything, so I won't upset myself, so that I can get away with not being affected by this conversation. I'll make myself too small. And where something is that's important is at stake, I'll make myself superficial or irrelevant in it by just staying quiet or agreeing with you. Because I'm completely with you. Superficial conversation is wonderful and important. So I don't think it's that. I think it's what happens where we live a life of sort of being absent from ourselves for the sake of harmony. I really know about this one because that's my other thing I've done many, many times in the past, and have really learned in recent years how to have a voice and speak up for myself. So we need, it's like she's doing a great job of showing us these two sides of it at the same time, which is the one side is being softening. I really loved the way you said it, which is holding our own position lightly enough that we can be changed by other people, but also reserving that point where the superpower of having a position is really called for, and that it might be that we've talked for 3 hours or 10 days and I still stand where I stood, But what I've done is I've let myself be the right size in order to find that. So that's, so not holding on at the start, but also not giving up. Because how else do we learn from one another with all of the multiple interpretations there are in the world, unless we're willing to have an interpretation that we're willing to advance and say, I see it this way. Right now, this is the way I see it. I think the move I heard in what you were saying that was so beautiful and so inviting is, what happens if we let ourselves hold onto what's important to us, but not so tight that it will close us down and not so tight that it will shield us from one another, and then get super interested in another person's interpretation and let ourselves feel all the feelings. So let myself feel shocked by what you say, let myself feel upset or inspired or opened or delighted or surprised or whatever. Let myself feel all of those. And as I feel them, because our feelings tell us a ton about what we care about, I can wonder about my own position. And maybe at the end, we'll both be changed by our interaction. Or maybe our positions won't be changed, but our capacity to understand the position of another, the dignity and humanity in another person. Or maybe we'll listen and really come to the conclusion that there's a profound flaw in the way that you're seeing things, and now I can see more clearly why I stand where I stand, because I've really listened to the reasoning and the explanation that has you take the position or believe what you believe, and I can now feel more clearly, oh, I get why I believe what I believe. So it has to not be I'm rigidly going to hold on, nor does any of this listening to one another have to be, oh, we're all just going to give up our place. We're all going to give up what matters to us in an effort to be nice and kind to one another. Somewhere in between, there's staying open and staying true, like both at the same time.
What just came to me, Justin, was the other day I had to apologize for something. And so when we step off that kind of I'm right thing, and it was about some kind of really trivial thing where my sister had said to me, oh, there's a coat in the cupboard in the cellar. But I'd forgotten that she said cupboard. So I was scrambling around in the cellar for ages to find this coat. And she said, but I did say it was in the cupboard. And I said, no, you didn't. You just said it was in the cellar. Like it was one of those like sibling arguments or whatever. And then she texted me the message, screenshotted the message that said she had said it was in the cupboard because she felt really bad that she'd made me scrabble around in the cellar. Anyway, I texted her and I said, I'm really sorry. I was really tired that day and I didn't read your message properly. And in the saying of the sorry, it's such a tiny example and there was really nothing at stake. But even with that, I could feel the kind of shame that stops me from stepping off my position. Because if I step off, I have to experience the kind of shame of being wrong person, the person who was wrong, or the person who didn't really know, or the person who didn't do something properly, or whatever. And in that same example, though, what I saw really clearly was that I could trust the person I was talking to, which happened to be my sister, that I can say I'm sorry, and she doesn't then write me off completely as a terrible person because I said I was sorry, which is the fear as well. It's like, well, if I'm not the person I said I was, if I don't have intact what I thought I had intact, my position, then maybe that person is going to completely write me off. So for me, it's like the relationship's at stake when I step off that place of my position. And so my question and curiosity is, what could I do to deepen my trust of other people, that I would still be welcome, even if I was wrong, even if I didn't know, even if my opinion was completely flawed and unsubstantial, all my fears about myself, what if they didn't determine how other people viewed me? What if they can see something in me that's more essential than all of those things? And what if I could trust that? And how much more readily available it would be to say sorry if I could trust people more? And I wouldn't have to hold on so tight, and I wouldn't have to defend myself, and I wouldn't have to protect my position. Because in that moment, my position feels like I'm kind of safeguarding who I am in the world, which is not true, but it feels that way. And so if I could trust and if I could apologize freely and faithfully, I wonder what that would do to do the very thing I'm seeking, which is to create more relationship, to deepen relationship, is to apologize and surrender. And of course, not always, but, you know, I can feel in this example, like, it was really okay. And of course, we just carried on with something else. It wasn't such a big thing at all.
I so love what you're saying here, Lizzie. And it seems to me that you're getting at the sort of the underbelly of this whole question. Because what you're really talking about is belonging with one another.
Mm.
And it can look like what we're talking about here is about what Meg Wheatley talks about, which of course it is, which is, can I tolerate, can I allow myself not to feel right? Can I listen to you? Can I open to there being multiple interpretations? Can I be affected by it? Yes, all of that. But really what underlies it for most of us is a really tender spot, which is if I admit to having made a mistake, if I admit to having got it wrong, or even, frankly, if I admit to being changed by you, will I still belong here? Will I still belong with you? Can I stay? And most of us have got enough experience of having tried the vulnerability of admitting and finding that the other person misused that. And so I say to you, I'm really sorry. You know, I really messed up. I forgot that it was something. This was something important to you, and I didn't hold to my promise, Lizzie. You would never do this to me, I know. But then you come back and you go, see, let me now tell you all the ways that you're a terrible person. Proof. And of course, once that's happened once to us, we don't really want to do it again. And so we hold on. I think that we hold on to our positions often when they don't have very much grounding. They don't have grounding in thinking clearly or in a principle or in ethics or in something. We hold on to our positions because we feel that if we hold on to them, we'll belong somewhere. And that's really what's at stake. And so this is not about logical argument. And I think it's why we get swept up into, you know, into sort of groupings where we all share same opinion about something, and we can, you know, label other people. So all of the big conversation that's going on in our culture now, for example, about race and prejudice, which is so intractable and so difficult, but it's the same thing that happens in families and in small groups. This part of it is the same, which is, I think, if I hold on to my position long enough, I'll belong somewhere. I'll belong with the people who agree with me. I'll belong with them against you. And if I admit that I've wronged you, Lizzie, I might fall out of belonging with them and with you. And that's terribly vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so it struck me from what you were saying that there's two parts to this. One is, can we be the people who, when other people come to us and say, I'm different, I'm sorry, I've changed my mind, I see it a different way, we don't join in the chorus of shaming and instead make the vulnerable move of welcoming them, going, I see you.
Mm.
So that's one thing we could do. And the second thing that we could do for ourselves is, I wonder what it would take to learn to trust that we're held in life anyway. And even if I do come and apologize to you and you're feeling very wounded and you say something that's very wounding back to me, I can still trust that life is holding me enough that it's safe to do that, because otherwise the cost is that we all just rigidify in our positions because we're too afraid of shame, mostly, I think, or not belonging, as I was saying.
Yeah, I can feel huge relief when I consider this apology feeling. Like, until I apologize, I don't know how awful it was to not apologize. And to say, listen, I'm just really sorry, feels like it lets something go that I've been holding, which felt really important and needed. But once I've let it go and I've stepped off the position, it feels so much less consuming. And so I'm just wondering about the cost to us, you know, even in our bodies of holding so many positions. And of course, you know, as Meg Wheatley is saying, you don't need to have a conversation with someone for your own beliefs to be revealed to you. every time you're shocked, every time you're in disbelief, every time you can't believe, how could someone think that? To not stop there, but to go, okay, so if I'm thinking, how could someone think that? What do I think? Where do I stand? What am I holding on to? And to have the world be gifting us these moments, as she says, gifting us these moments of deepening our own contact with our beliefs and the positions that we hold, so that we can cultivate a way of letting them go, so that we can let things down and stop being so tense and so ready and so holding. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could be much more relaxed than we are if we would just let go of some of this stuff.
Mm. Such beautiful language. I'm wondering, as we come to a close, drawing on two things that you said earlier, was letting go and holding on at the same time, both. Can we let go so that we're not so tense? Like, what would it be like? Here's a sort of invitation for us all. What would it be like to hold on to what we really care about, to not be flimsy with it, but not to hold on to it in a way that has us be tense and rigid and defended, so it's both open and standing?
Mm.
And that's where we know that we can change our stand when it's called for. So neither sort of floppy and falling all over the place, nor like rigid. And it is as much to do with our bodies as it is to do with anything else, and it's as much to do with the way we trust relationships as it is anything else.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's definitely time that we should end today. And Lizzie, thank you so much for being in this conversation in this way. I feel like I'm also changed by it.
Mm.
Every time, which is a huge part of what makes this alive.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you everyone for being with us for another week, and all being well, we'll be back same time, same place next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Everybody.